Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. That's right. This is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to be back. Welcome back to you, to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And have you ever sat down in front of a microphone and realized you had an hour of airtime to fill, and you just had no idea where to start, no idea what to say or what to do? Well, I never have. That has never happened to me, and that's why I have the show. That's right. That's why you're tuning in. So glad to have you. Where do I want to start? I want to start with homeschooling, briefly. Now, don't turn it off if you're just a garden variety heathen who's just tuned in for the first time. Maybe someone turned you on to the show, and you want to find out what this radical right-winger is all about. But I'm going to talk briefly about homeschooling. For any of you people who don't homeschool, I want to tell you about an experience I had last night. At about 8:30, with my 4-year-old daughter, as I felt her learning to read. Yes, I was reading a little story in a little book to my little 4-year-old daughter, and started sounding out the word slowly, and she started finishing some, and then she read the word egg. It was one of the most thrilling experiences of my life, and I have had some pretty thrilling experiences. But this was definitely top five. When she read the word egg. That's right.
Why egg?
Well, it happened to be the next word in the sentence, egg. So, folks, homeschooling is difficult, and it's a sacrifice, and yes, and all of that, but it's also, it's an extreme joy and a pleasure. I recommend it to everyone, and anyone who's not doing it, I'm not here to judge. I'm just telling you that you're missing out. You're missing out. That's all. Yeah, homeschool. I was schooling my daughter at 8:30 last night. That's why it's hard. It's harder than the average public school teacher. You know, she punches in at 7:15, wakes up at 9, and then teaches the kid until 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then, boom, it's straight to the bar. But that's not how it works around here at the McBurney compound. Oh, not to disparage public educators in any way, shape, or form. I apologize if anyone's offended. All right, let's go to Sao Paulo, Brazil for today's open. We always like to open with something a little lighthearted. So down in Sao Paulo, a soccer referee, expelled a player from a game last weekend. And the two got into a fist fight, and then the referee took out a knife and stabbed the player to death. He died on his way to the hospital. Now, the player's friends and relatives immediately rushed to the field, according to USA Today, and stoned the referee to death, and then quartered his body. Wow. That means they chopped him into pieces, for all of you who graduated and matriculated in the government schools. They quartered his body, they cut him into pieces. Spectators also then decapitated the ref and stuck his head on a pike in the middle of the field. Now, if you've been listening to the show at any time in the past, since now when we started back in 99, off and on, you know that I detest and loathe soccer. But I have been easy on soccer because many of my close friends, their children participate in soccer, and so I don't want to offend my close friends. And so I'm not going to use this story to attack soccer, which I loathe and despise. But I am going to point out that as Western civilization, and yes, Sao Paulo, Brazil is in the Western Hemisphere, it's considered part of the West, as Western civilization slips further and further away from her godly principles and foundation, the thin veil of civilization seems to be slipping away as well. Stoned him, quartered his body, put his head on a pike, not to mention the fact that the ref stabbed a player to death on the field. Well, if you were at the soccer match, you'd be scared and running. Talk to me, Sammy. Oh, and indeed it did there. Right there at the soccer field in Sao Paulo, Brazil. A sad state of affairs. I thought we were going to open with something lighthearted. Oh, I guess that was the homeschooling, the word egg. That was the lighthearted open, and then we go right to drawn and quartered, decapitated. A feel-good story. Yeah, exactly. All right, so there goes the thin veil of civilization. And, by the way, we've been on the road for a couple weeks. Went out to California. And I think we would agree that the horticulture, the decorating was fabulous. Excellent work, Lord. The whole Southern California thing. It's just gorgeous. But the green fanaticism, energy conservation, has just about ruined that place. I'm sitting in our hotel room, and I'm reading. And I happen to be in the bathroom, which happens from time to time. Get a lot of reading done there. People tend not to bother you. So it's a good place to get some reading done. Well, they have invented a gadget in California. You turn the light on in the bathroom, you go down, you have a seat. You know, you're reading. Well, if you don't move sufficiently, there's a motion detector now built into the light switch. And after about 15 minutes, the light switch just shuts off. It might just be hotels, but I think it has to do with the smart meters and all of that going on all over, and especially in Southern California. So anyway, I devised a strategy by which about every 4 or 5 minutes I would wave my stack of stories or the book I was reading, just wave it at the motion detector so that I could still have light. And so anyway, there's too many people there, and they're very annoying, and they drive too fast, except on the 405. I commuted for 2 weekdays on the 405, and that it makes me understand why real estate is so expensive in Southern California. The reason being, if you live more than 2 exits on the 405 from your place of work, you will commit suicide eventually. It's going to happen. No. I commuted 45 minutes to go 2 exits on the 405 freeway in Orange County, and I could not live in that type of situation. I'd have to live next door to work. Minimum 1 exit. Otherwise, you're going to be addicted to prescription drugs, or you're just going to off yourself. Just unbearable. All right, now I don't know what you people let happen while I was away, but as I predicted, may I remind you, the Supreme Court has struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, and in effect, at least in the minds of tens of millions of Americans, legalized homosexual marriage while I was off on vacation. What were you people doing? Were you people not paying attention? No, I predicted this, that the Supreme Court in the month of June, the traditional marriage month for normal people, would strike down the Defense of Marriage Act, would rule against Proposition 8, and in effect legalize homosexual marriage. Now, I know that the Supreme Court doesn't have the power, supposedly, to write laws and create legislation, all of that. But that's really not what matters. And I'll get into that a little further, like what the law is and what the Constitution says about who has the power to write laws, that's really a secondary feature of American society. It's a secondary thing. What really matters is what is in the hearts of the people. And I'll go on a little bit further, but let me read from the official story from Time Magazine from their Swampland section. Swampland? I don't know. The link says http://swampland.time.com. Anyway, it's Time Magazine. A federal law defining marriage as between a man and a woman has been struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court, capping one of the fastest civil rights shifts in the nation's history. Do you remember 1991, was it? 92? When here in Colorado we were the epicenter of the homo convulsions with Proposition, what was it called? Amendment 2. Amendment 2 simply said you didn't have to hire queers, you didn't have to rent a room to queers, you didn't have to bake a cake for a queer wedding. You didn't have to do anything you didn't want to for the queers if you were straight. And there was quite a hullabaloo about it back in 1992-ish. And now, how far out are we from that? 20 years? And now they're marrying each other. The governors and the mayors are overseeing the actual ceremonies in which the sodomites are defiling one another and defiling marriage. We had the mayor of Denver participating I don't even want to talk about it. But it has been one of the fastest civil rights shifts in history, led by the church. In fact, led by James Dobson. Yeah, it was him in 1992 who said that the homosexuals should have equal rights, not special rights. Well, and now, from what I understand, in an email that I just read from Jim, I have Jim's personal email. Jim says he's working so hard. Should I read this? This is semi-private conversation, but there was about 100 people CC'd on this. A good friend of the show, Greg Jackson, author, a talk show host himself, and not a bad salesman. He has been writing Jim Dobson. What's Daly's name? Is his name Daly too? Anyway, Greg's been writing Jim Dobson about once a week for months, asking him to throw his support behind personhood. And, Jim finally replied to Greg, and he said, "Greg, I am inundated by issues that should be fought for and against. I am tackling as many of them as I can. Our radio program today dealt with the Supreme Court decisions. My letter this month was on the Boy Scout disaster. I receive 50-plus blogs a day that deal with the wickedness around us. I am finishing an 8-DVD series on winning your children to Christ, and I am writing a book on that subject. Then there is preparation for the daily radio show and running a busy ministry. In short, there are important battles I just can't fight. Of course, I am for the Brady Amendment and personhood, but I tend to concentrate on the national issues. I have poured my life into the sanctity of human life for over 40 years and will do so as long as I have breath in my body." And the crowd went wild. That was Jim Dobson, as written to my friend Greg. And then I wrote back to Greg, and I initially, I wrote about a 3-page email, and then over the course of 3 days, I went back and edited out all the insults that I was throwing out at Mr. Dobson, all the personal attacks and the vindictive cutting statements. Anything that was unprofitable, I cut out of the email. And, there was a second email. How should I do this? I've gotten them out of order. Well, let's just go with it as I started. I wrote back to Greg. Now, this is the highly redacted, edited version. I said, "Greg, I originally included Dr. Dobson on this reply, but I've chosen instead to keep my message in-house for now, and I CC'd about a dozen people. Godly men, mighty men of valor, and women too, by the way. I subscribe to the King's English, where the masculine encompasses the feminine, so I don't want to insult any of you females out there. When I say mighty men of God, mighty men of valor, I'm talking about you too, ladies." Anyway, so I didn't CC Dobson on this, so anyone out there who's listening, feel free to send him a link. I say, "Greg, it's comical in a dark sense that Jim says he's too busy to boldly and publicly fight against the murder of innocent people because of two battles that he helped engineer. What are the two battles, you might ask? The queering of marriage by the Supreme Court and the destruction of the Boy Scouts. You may ask, what are you talking about? Jim Dobson helped engineer these. Well, here's what I say. Dobson's stance in the early 90s that homosexuals should have equal rights and not special rights was key in the construction of the steamroller of sodomy under which we now find ourselves flattened. Add to this the fact that his support for the well-regulated murder of innocent people helped prune the abortion weed for a generation. It strengthened the root of evil, normalizing a tolerance for murder in the minds of millions of Christians, and ultimately contributed to the legalized murder of tens of millions of innocent people. One could make a convincing case that James Dobson has done as much, if not more, to destroy the Christian foundation of our families and our country than any man of his generation. And if one were a cynic, one might even wonder if Mr. Dobson has made a mere industry of his, quote, pro-family work, unquote. After all, his investment in normalizing homosexuality in the 90s seems to have paid off with plenty of work for him to do today. I believe he's currently campaigning to raise money to advocate against equality for the same homosexuals he once insisted we call equal. Schizophrenia, you may ask. Well, I could not make that diagnosis. Perhaps we should ask the good doctor. And really, Dr. Dobson, 8 DVDs and a book to figure out how to win your kids to Christ? My pastor can relay an effective strategy in a half-hour sermon. But I suppose that's the difference between a genuine pastor and a mere psychologist. Now, the scripture reads, by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word shall be established. Well, I have presented here two witnesses against Dobson. It is up to the man whether more are established or if he repents. And my only prayer for Jim Dobson is the following: that what he has is taken from him and is given to another man more worthy. Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. So glad to be back. I know I've probably offended at least 40% of my audience who think that Jim Dobson is someone. But let me go to the email that started this. Greg Jackson sent out his weekly plea to Dobson to please support personhood, basically restoring the God-given right to life to every innocent person and stopping the shedding of innocent blood. I can't imagine a subject that is more national, Mr. Dobson. But anyway, Greg sent out his weekly plea, and here's what, and Greg CCs everybody, hundreds and hundreds of people, people you would know, people you would recognize. And Dobson wrote to a friend of his on the email thread. He said, Greg Jackson, whom I don't know, is one, oh, by the way, Dr. Dobson, saying that, opening up an email with, hey, Roy, Greg Jackson, whom I don't know. Okay, saying that, Mr. Dobson, is like saying, don't you know who I am, to a maitre d' at a restaurant. You're so full of yourself, you make me sick. Did you ever think it would come to this, that you would be this cloistered and separated from reality and this prideful? Back to the message. Roy, Greg Jackson, whom I don't know, is one of the Enyart gang that attacked me over the partial birth abortion ban some years ago. Here he has done it again. See his emboldened statement below in response to Steve Bear. And look at the list of people Bear copied. The list is comprised of some wonderful godly people, but salted among them are some crazies, including Enyart. I'm going to be changing my email address soon, and I'll let you know what the new one will be. But anyway, I replied to Jim. I says, Jim, I must agree with your observation that Enyart is salted in among the rest on the list. He and his gang are among the saltiest indeed. But you must agree with me that you indeed broke your pledge. Remember your pledge, the one in which you invoked the name of God and became a liar? Regarding your support for politicians who would advocate killing, quote, even a single innocent child, unquote. Do you remember that pledge, Mr. Dobson? Now, I go on. After Focus on the Family raised and spent our millions, you admitted that, quote, ending partial birth abortion does not save a single human life, unquote. That's not one of Enyart's crazies. That's Jim Dobson himself said that. Now, Mr. Dobson, you've also publicly admitted that you lost the culture war, and now you call Pastor Enyart a crazy for first privately and then finally publicly calling you back to the narrow road? You call him crazy? Mr. Dobson, King Saul comes to mind. That's right. Look it up. He's in the Bible. He's a man who started well. He's not in a psychology textbook, Mr. Dobson. It's in the Bible early on. King Saul comes to mind, a man who started well, but eventually became a worldly politician who lost his ability to discern that which is godly. Now, how's that for an analogy, Mr. Dobson? Mr. Dobson, personhood is godly. Your support for those who regulate the killing of innocent people is ungodly. And an audience with John Boehner to discuss process-oriented strategery regarding whatever it is Steve Baer was talking about, debt-financed abortion, is just more politics. It's foolishness. They have altogether become unprofitable. And Mr. Dobson, you can change your email address 1,000 times, but you will still answer to God regarding your pledge. While you live, there is still time to repair what you have lost. Sincerely, Doug McBurney, one of the NYART crazies, as personally diagnosed via internet by Dr. James Dobson. There's my semi-private email conversation. Well, it's not private anymore. Not even semi-private. There is my open letter, my open letters to Jim Dobson. And Greg, you've got to stop pleading with Mr. Dobson to talk with Personhood USA and the leadership of the Personhood movement. Because from what I understand, Mr. Dobson does not associate with competitive fundraisers. So, but we do appreciate your efforts, Mr. Jackson. Now, back to the Supreme Court. While I was away, the Supreme Court legalized homosexual marriage in the minds of millions. Time reports that in a separate 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court cleared the way for same-sex marriage to resume in California, ruling that those appealing to uphold the ban known as Prop 8 did not have legal standing, effectively basically striking down everything associated with normal marriage and propping up everything associated with homosexual marriage. Is what happened here in the there in the month of June. And you know, folks, the court is only codifying what the loudest and most active people want. I mean, it's just like 1973, folks. It's not as if abortion wasn't on the rise and gaining acceptance in the by the late 60s and early 70s. It was already going on. States had already legalized it. California, Colorado, Mississippi come to mind. So the Supreme Court is just giving the people what they want, and right now they seem to think they want homosexuals to be getting married, and so the Supreme Court simply lends their voice to it. And in the minds of millions, especially young people, going forward, homosexual marriage will be normalized. Hence, the Supreme Court has made themselves greatly responsible for the destruction of the Republic, the destruction of Western civilization. And they will be judged. All right. So on the heels of the Supreme Court ruling against normalcy and in favor of perversion, I have a report from USA Today. The marriage rate in America is at its lowest point in more than a century. 2/3 of first marriages are preceded by cohabitation, which we used to refer to as fornication or shacking up. Is what we used to call it back in Texas. Yeah, they're shacking up. Shacking up's become the norm now. 2/3 of first marriages. According to projections from the private company Demographic Intelligence of Charlottesville. What? The name of this company is Demographic Intelligence of Charlottesville. Probably an NSA front out there gathering all your metadata. The company projects a 4% increase in the number of weddings. That's going to be occurring soon, depending on the economic recovery, so apparently all is not lost. Demographic Intelligence, a private company, not associated with the government in any way, predicts that there will be a slight increase in weddings going forward, and we may be in the midst of as much as a 4% increase in the number of weddings, coming off a record low. This private company says declines in weddings are likely to set in towards the end of the decade, even though the number of young adults is increasing because of the nation's ongoing retreat from marriage. A retreat from marriage is happening. Tell me that's not a death knell for any civilization when people no longer want to be married and honor God and have kids. Well, I mean, where do you go from there with a civilization? Straight to hell in a handbasket, all right? I'll call that one for you. The company is also analyzing same-sex marriage, but the data analysis isn't yet complete. Okay, well, that's just wonderful. I'm sure that'll show a marked increase this year and going forward. All right. But no need to worry, ladies and gentlemen. While we here in the West fiddle, the Middle East, things are going in the Middle East in a pattern repeated throughout the country. During a 10-day journey through rebel-held territory in Syria, Reuters journalists found that radical Islamist units are sidelining more moderate groups that do not share the Islamist goal of establishing a supreme religious leadership in the country. You see, in Syria, the Islamists want to reestablish the caliphate. They want Islamic law. They want the mullahs in charge. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of teenage kids with iPhones and tight jeans who think that they're out there, they're going to win one for democracy. Well, this article from Reuters talks about how the Islamists are much more organized. In fact, the headline is, "Syria's Islamists seize control as moderates dither." Yep, all the kids with their iPhones and their tight pants, they want to shack up with somebody, or who knows what they're after. But the Islamists are serious, you see. According to Reuters, the moderates appear no match for Islamist units. The Islamist ascendancy presents a barrier to the original democratic aims of the revolt and calls into question whether the United States can ensure supplies of weapons go only to groups friendly to the West. Another thing happened while I was away. I don't know what you people were doing. But now Obama is going to be shipping arms to the Syrian militants in broad daylight. Instead of smuggling them the way he had been, now he's going to be arming them openly. He's going to be armed. And who's going to get the weapons? Well, according to Reuters, it's the Islamists who are the best organized. And Reuters says weapons could reach hardline Islamist groups. Gee, you think? I think it might. I think they might. Minority Christians are concerned that this alliance, the Islamists, will try to impose a Taliban-style rule. As well, I'm sure the Christians are just flooding out of Syria. If there were any left, they've got to be getting out of there. The Reuters reporter said, well, they go through all the looting and the rapes and the fact that a lot of these political organizations who are not Islamist are basically just criminals. They rob houses, they steal children and rape women, and they steal the money of the man of the house. They steal cars. They raid businesses and walk out with everything. But Reuters reports that the Islamists are more energetic and better organized, and the Islamists do not steal. Yeah, so when the Islamists roll into town, the Syrian people apparently don't have to fear being robbed. And, you know, that goes a long way in Syria. Just the fact that you don't roll into town and steal everything gives you a lot of credibility with these people, and that's what the Islamists are doing. One member of a secular party who called himself Omar said the Islamist alliance wants to weaken his group because his group disagrees with Islamist ideology and seeks democracy. Omar went on to say that he was a fan of the American heavy metal band Metallica. And he had tried to bring Metallica to Syria, but the Islamists had rejected him. Anyway, who do you think wins in Syria, folks? The people who in their heart of hearts believe they are fighting for their God, or the people who want to wear jeans and tweet and go to Metallica concerts? Who do you think wins? It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And welcome back. Welcome back. We're halfway through the show, and I've just got so much. I wanted to segue from the disaster in the Middle East, as epitomized by the Islamists taking control of Syria, being armed by Barry Ho, and the administration, over to what the administration is doing officially in the way of advancing civilization in general, and let's see, what is the administration up to? Story from the Gateway Pundit. U.S. troops deployed to Kandahar Airfield in Afghanistan held their first lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender pride event to be observed in a deployed environment. It's delightful, isn't it? Yeah. The Pentagon also held an LGBT Pride Month ceremony last Tuesday, one day before the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act. So while the Supreme Court was conniving to strike down normal marriage and redefine marriage, the Pentagon was having a homosexual queer a bathhouse party right there in the Pentagon. I think they should change the name of the Pentagon to the Pentagram. All right. Snowden. What's the guy's? Edward Snowden, by the way. Let's get back to Edward Snowden. Before I left, I said he's a traitor. He should be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. I think you would all agree with me at this point. Even those of you who may have been questioning. Yes, he ran off to Russia, and he's been in Russia allegedly in the airport for a couple of weeks. And apparently in the recent past, the last few hours, offers for asylum have come from communist dictators in Nicaragua and Venezuela. Yeah. So after Vlad squoze all the information he could out of Mr. Snowden, this poor ignorant child. Can you imagine him trying to outsmart Vladimir Putin? I just don't see it happening. So anyway, I have a feeling when Snowden gets off the plane, whether it's in Nicaragua, Venezuela, or a federal penitentiary, that kid's going to look used up. I mean, he's going to look like he ain't slept in a week because Vlad's had his way with the boy. Snowden is allegedly being sought by the United States, according to the Associated Press, although there really is no sign of that. Obama said he would not scramble jets, and he hasn't even called anyone about the kid, from what I understand. And so this is all playing very nicely into Obama's strategy of just chaos. Hey, Obama's in trouble. Benghazi, I mean, he was on the edge with Benghazi, so I think Obama just welcomes anything that muddies the water. Okay, and not that he's planning it or orchestrating it, just that he welcomes it. I mean, if he can't catch the Snowden kid, he's going to be looking for another scandal next week so that he can somehow avoid the day of reckoning on Benghazi, where he got four people killed. Okay? There hasn't been a president who got four people killed like that, well, ever. And so eventually there is going to be a day of reckoning on that. I may have something. Oh, here we go. From CBS, Marine Corps Colonel George Bristol was in a key position in the U.S. Africa Command in the chain of command the night of the Benghazi attack. He's high on the list that some Republican congressmen want to interview, but nobody knows where he is, and the Pentagon won't tell. How do you not know where a Marine colonel is? How does that happen? Well, he's retired, they say. He was the commander of Joint Special Operations Task Force that was based there in Stuttgart. And he was so until he retired last March. He's quoted in his retirement ceremony as telling his troops, quote, "An evil has descended upon Africa," referring to Islamic militants groups, "and he says it is upon us to stomp it out." That sounds like a Marine colonel. A darkness. But anyway, nobody can find this guy. So he's retired, so the Department of Defense says, well, we can't make him testify. And Congress is saying, well, wait a minute, we're the Congress. We can make anybody testify, whether they're retired or not. As long as they're alive and breathing, we want him here to testify. Well, nobody can find this guy. I don't think a colonel has ever been lost. Whether retired or active duty or in the reserves, you don't lose colonels. Where is this fella? Anyway, he could contribute significantly to the day of reckoning that I mentioned earlier. Later this month, the House Oversight Committee is expected to hold a public hearing on Benghazi. Later this month. So the long, hot summer continues, and the shoes continue to drop all around Obama. But nobody can make anything stick. I don't understand it. But there we are. We're hoping to hear from Here's his name, Colonel George Bristol. If anyone out there knows where he is, please help us out. Send an email, send a text over to, who's the Congress? Jason Chaffetz, Republican of Oregon. Yeah. Chaffetz is looking for this colonel, and we hope things are okay with the colonel. We hope his health is all right. Very disturbing. Let's go on. Yes. CNN launched a brand new television show. It's called New Day. New Day with CNN. It's hosted by a bunch of queers and deviants, perverts. But they opened their show with a story I was actually interested in. An unreleased documentary on the 1996 TWA Flight 800 explosion. They say it offers, quote, solid proof that there was an external detonation, according to the producers. So anyway, they go through all the theories and da-da-da-da-da. We don't know. Anyway, they basically say that the plane just didn't spontaneously explode, which has always been my theory, that planes just don't do that. They never have, and that one didn't either. But anyway, here's what bothered me about the story. The people who are quoted include Hank Hughes. He served as a senior accident investigator with the NTSB, and another fellow named Bob Young, a TWA investigator, who participated in the investigation, and Jim Spear. He was an accident investigator for the Airline Pilots Association. All of these men waited until their retirement before speaking out on what they allege is a cover-up of the facts around the death of hundreds of innocent people. And folks, this is the problem with lifer bureaucrat types, is their retirement is far more important to them than anything else, because generally they're slackers and losers, and they know that if they lost their cushy government job or their cushy institutional job, that they'd have to go out and fend for themselves, and they'd probably end up on the side of the street with a cardboard sign. And so cowardly men wait until they get their retirement, nearly 20 years on, before they come out and finally say they want to know the truth. And these guys should be shamed publicly, if not arrested and perhaps caned in the public square for not speaking up at the time in order to get their pathetic retirement. Unbelievable. It makes me sick. Okay, from the Bad Religion file, we go to the Vatican. Just to offend any Catholics who are listening, the Holy See is set to reveal a miracle that they say will amaze the world. You know, the thing about these miracles these days is they never really amaze the world, right? I mean, we were watching a documentary on the parting of the Red Sea the other night, and it was about how scientifically, geographically, and aerodynamically the wind could come in on a certain place in a Red Sea, and you see the sea go back, and I mean, that amazed the world. Right? I mean, that was when a miracle was a miracle. But these days, you have a nun, she gets a stomach virus, she recovers a week early, it's a miracle. Let's make him a saint. Anyway, the miracle, according to the Holy See, says that John Paul healed a Costa Rican woman. She was cured of a severe brain injury after her family began praying in the memory of the late Pope. So he healed this lady after he was dead. How's that for a miracle? Well, actually, I'm a little skeptical, but John Paul II was beatified in May of 2011, you remember. He wasn't even cold in the ground. They were already making him a saint. This is the guy who presided over 25 years of priests molesting boys. By the way, as far as good pope, bad pope theory, if you've heard my good pope, bad pope, you know, there's good popes and there's bad popes. I would say John Paul was one of the better popes, but... I mean, at least he wasn't participating in the annihilation of a group of people or robbing people blind and plundering nations. But he did kind of hide the molesters for the better most part of his career. But anyway, he needs two miracles, okay? If you're familiar with the Catholic hierarchy, you need two miracles to be a saint. That's required. And apparently, the second miracle occurred right on the very day of his beatification. His first attributed miracle was the apparent healing of a French nun. We're not sure what she had. She was praying. She recovered from Parkinson's disease after praying to the dead Pope. I don't know if you can. Can you be really credited with a miracle after you're already dead? I guess only in the Catholic Church. Anyway, the police. So he's likely to formally be made a saint in autumn. The canonization is likely to be attended by hundreds of thousands, one of the fastest canonizations in history. This is why you Catholics lose me with your superstitious foolishness. But I love you. I love you like brothers and sisters, okay? Now, let's get back to the, let's move on to the incestuous relationship between Republicans and Democrats. This is from The Hill. I don't know if this was this week, last week, or the week before. I've been holding on to this story for a little while. Jeb Bush will present Hillary Clinton with the 2013 Liberty Medal this fall in Philadelphia. And he intends to do it with a straight face. Yeah, if you can believe that. Jeb Bush is going to give a Liberty Medal to Hillary Clinton. Bush is chairman of the National Constitution Center, which is giving Hillary Clinton the award in honor of her career in public service. That's right. That Jeb Bush, you remember, he presided over the murder of Terri Schiavo down in Florida. You remember that? I remember that, Jeb. I remember. He presided over the murder of Terri Schiavo down there in Florida. And hence, he and Hillary are kindred spirits forever, because they have both presided over the murder of countless innocent people under the color of law, making them birds of a feather, so to speak. So naturally, Jeb is going to give Hillary a medal, and then they're going to do a kabuki dance in 2016 and perhaps run against each other for the presidency, and it really doesn't matter which one of them wins. Although Hillary would be more distasteful on the surface, Jeb would probably be the more insidious. Destroyer would be Jeb Bush. Is there anyone in the audience I have not offended? I've gotten the Catholics out of the way, the Republicans. Anyone who ever bought a book by Jim Dobson? I don't think I can offend anyone else. I think I've achieved all my goals that I had hoped to set upon returning to the air, and I should probably sign off. No, I won't sign off. What does Hillary say about being a female president? Well, she says in a speech posted to YouTube, she told a Canadian audience that she hoped the U.S. would elect a woman to the White House because it would send exactly the right historical signal to men, women and children, but mostly to men. She says the nation needs, then women need to dare to compete, and the nation needs to take that leap of faith. Let me say this, hypothetically speaking, I really do hope that we have a woman president in my lifetime. Hypothetically speaking. Clinton cited former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, who said that women in politics needed skin as thick as rhinoceri. What about ankles? Huh? Is there a thickness requirement on the ankles? And why was Hillary speaking hypothetically about a female president? Because even she's not convinced she's a female. That's right. Let's see here. Hillary also noted, by the way, this story is from the Associated Press, and Hillary also noted that the U.S. made history in 2008 by electing Barack Obama, the first homosexual communist traitor. Okay, well, he's only half black, but still. I didn't know. It was Time. No, I think it was Newsweek magazine that called Barry the first gay president. So I'm not speaking out of school here. I'm just saying. All right. Now, the fight over homosexuals taking over the culture. And that's what this is, folks. This is like the death grip that an alligator gets on someone down there in the swamps. Now, the homos have us in their death grip and they're going into that death spin. And what happens in the death spin is you get disoriented until eventually you're at the bottom of the swamp in the muck and the mire. And that's where we're all headed if we don't get out of this. And here's how vicious these bastards are. According to campusreform.org, gay marriage supporters ridiculed supporters of the Defense of Marriage Act and California's Prop 8 outside the Supreme Court during the court session, calling the views of people who disagree disgusting. So that's what the homosexuals are calling us, disgusting. Why? because we stopped calling them disgusting a generation ago, which is what we should have never done. They don't deserve equal rights. Anyone who advocates and participates in criminal activity does not deserve equal rights, and that's what homosexuality is. It is criminal activity that should be punishable by the law, and it should be shunned and shamed in every segment of society. And the fact that we don't do that, now they think we're disgusting. They call us hideous, heinous, and disgusting people because we don't think they should have the right to take our civilization down into the muck and mire of the swamp and kill us all. I have a quote from one of the homosexual activists right there on the steps of the Supreme Court. He told a campus reform interviewer, he said, quote, "I'm sorry, but people who disagree, it's hideous. It's disgusting. DOMA is disgusting. Proposition 8 is hideous. I feel nothing for them at all. I don't feel bad that they are upset." Unquote. So the homos have become extremely prideful. Talk about pride. By the way, CNN, no, it's not CNN either. It's Fox News. Fox News, on one of their pathetic shows, has a new tagline. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I, we were surfing through the channels the other night, and we hopped across Fox News, and what does the Fox News anchorette say? You always expect Fox News, fair and balanced. She said, "Fox News, proud and fearless." And I looked at my wife and I said, "Proud and fearless? Isn't that one of the seven things God hates is a proud look? That's like the first thing he hates. And doesn't it say that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of the wisdom and to raise your children in the fear and admonition of the Lord?" Fox says, "We're fearless and proud." Anyway, so now I've offended everyone who likes Fox News. What's that? Just in case there was anyone in the audience I missed, I wanted to make sure I got there. Anyway, folks, the homosexuals, now that they have won on the battle for marriage, they've got some other things. They want benefits in all 50 states. The Hill reports that gay lobbyists plan to use their Supreme Court victory to push legislation that would ensure married same-sex couples are eligible for federal benefits in all states. The homo group said their victory was incomplete. That's right, they'll never stop. And folks, here's my prediction. Now, you have to keep in mind, I predicted that in June that the Supreme Court would defile marriage and basically would rule against marriage and destroy the country, or at least lay the foundation for the destruction of the country. I don't know how to put it. Maybe they're removing stones from the foundation, and that was one of the cornerstones, has been removed now. And folks, these homosexuals will take over the government, the military, they'll take over the Supreme Court, and they'll do it faster than you think. They will outlaw Christianity. They will outlaw Christians. They will have us arrested, prosecuted, imprisoned, and eventually they will have us executed. Folks, it's been 40 years. 40 years since the Supreme Court legalized the killing of innocent people, and now homosexualization has been legalized. It's been turned loose. I predict that if something dramatic doesn't happen, that within 40 years, Christianity will be illegal. Christianity will be illegal, and your sons and daughters and my daughters will have to worry about being arrested for preaching the Word of God. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney, as we chronicle the end of what was a fine experiment in self-government. So let me get back to the Constitution. I've offended everyone. I want to now offend you people who believe that the Constitution is what made America and what holds us together. Folks, what's written down in the Constitution and the law in general is really a secondary issue to what's in the heart of the people. So those of you who think it was the Constitution that has held America together, you're wrong. It has been a common respect for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, you can't make me laugh when I'm doing it. My extremely attractive audio engineer just put Lynn Cheney's book up, We the People, in front of me. Just now, let me get back to what I was saying here because it was very important and it was deep, okay? It has been a common respect for the gospel of Jesus Christ that has held America together and that has made her great. It has been Christianity that has caused the Constitution to be efficacious. And once Christianity is gone, and it's close, folks, it's terrifying how fast the homosexualists are taking over. Once Christianity is removed from the public square, your Constitution won't be worth the paper it's written on. And not a single law will be worth anything, because lawlessness will become the order of the day. Violence, bloodshed, and lawlessness. Once you throw out the fundamental morality that undergirds the Christian faith, then the Constitution really doesn't matter. So it's not the Constitution that made America great. It's Jesus Christ who empowered the American people to live within the constraints of the Constitution, where reasonable, and to follow God where men were wrong. And I'm referring to slavery, right? Because slavery was codified in the Constitution, if you remember. But eventually it was Christianity and the Spirit of Jesus Christ that helped us overcome and eliminate slavery from the public square and from the continent. It wasn't the Constitution. It wasn't the Supreme Court. It wasn't the president. And it wasn't any legislation. It's the Spirit of Jesus Christ that holds us together. And as the Spirit of Jesus Christ is expelled, we will fall apart, Constitution and all. So there. Stop worshiping the Constitution. It's not inspired. You need to be inspired. I need to be inspired. And we need to inspire our children toward faith in the living God, the Creator, and the Savior, Jesus Christ. There's nothing else that matters, folks. You can flush the Constitution down the toilet, and if you have a group of people who respect and love Jesus Christ, they can govern themselves. I'm not calling for the Constitution to be flushed down the toilet. I was using hyperbole. Look it up. All right. On to the culture file. In a report from, where is this report from? I hate it when I do this, when I cut off the link. Anyway. I have a story here from a reputable news source. The nation's largest pediatricians group said its members should do more to fight heterosexism and homophobia, as well as step up their care of teens with same-sex attractions. This is the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, said that sexual minority youth should not be considered abnormal. They say their new materials on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youths are to be released very soon. In a policy statement that's non-binding, they recommend that pediatricians create offices that are teen-friendly and welcoming to all adolescents, regardless of sexual orientation or behavior. The American Academy of Pediatrics says that doctors can signal their openness to LGBTQ youths by posting a rainbow decal on their office door or bulletin board. So if you're a member of the AAP, you better get that rainbow sticker up on your window post-haste. You better put up the ribbon. If you don't have the ribbon, we're going to make you put up the ribbon. Who doesn't have the ribbon? Make them put on the ribbon. So this is a shakedown by a professional organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics, which has been infested, infected, and raped by the homosexual lobby. And now they're being held hostage. You will put up a rainbow sticker, or you'll be drummed out of pediatrics. Unless you start kowtowing to the homosexuals. They post a rainbow decal. Medical questionnaires should be changed to be gender neutral. And staff should be trained not to ask a boy about his girlfriend, but to ask him, tell me about your partner, instead. Help teenagers, help them develop positive self-esteem, because that's what buffers them against high-risk behaviors. I see. So the American Academy of Pediatrics says we need to help kids with their self-esteem so they won't engage in high-risk behaviors. So that's them admitting that homos have a lot more risky behaviors. They admit that in the subtext. The American College of Pediatricians was formed in 2002. This is another group as an alternative to the AAP. There's another group called the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And here's what they say. They say homosexual behavior can be changed and children experiencing gender identity confusion should receive therapy if needed. And they need to be around appropriate role models. So look at this. We've got the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is the premier organization, professional organization. But already you've got splintering off people who are not going to give in to the homosexual mafia. That's encouraging to see. That group was formed in 2002 as the homosexuals started queering everything in sight. Now, the AAP was founded in 1930, and they're offering unprecedented guidelines on transgender, questioning youth, gender identity formation, gender dysphoria. Everybody's obsessed with homosexuality. You know what? The more you talk about this kind of subject, the more possible it is to get sucked in by it because it's so evil and corrupting. It's like heroin. You know, the first time you do it, you puke and you get sick. But then within 6 months, you can't live without it. That's why it's so terrifying, homosexuality. It's like the most grievous of all physical sins that you can participate in with your body. The most difficult to recover from, I'm sure. The AAP policy says that therapy to change one's sexual orientation is never indicated. And they urged any pediatrician who does not feel competent to provide specialized care for sexual minority teens and their families to please refer them for medically appropriate care elsewhere. So they say if you don't know how to deal with homosexual teenagers, the AAP says, please call us. We will refer a molester to come over right away. What's your address? What's the boy's name? Bunch of perverts. Unbelievable. More from the Pentagon, a top advisor. This is from the Washington Times. A top advisor to President Obama has declared the country is safer now that homosexuals openly serve in the ranks. Yeah. Yeah. That's according to Valerie Jarrett, one of the troika of women who run the country. They had their second annual Gay Pride gathering at the Defense Department. They featured a gay Marine officer, an Air Force lawyer, and a lesbian West Point graduate, speaking of the trifecta of perversion. How appropriate. Under Obama's troika of girls is the trifecta of perversion in the military. Speakers were assembled by a new group, DOD Pride. Pride, they say, with a straight face, as if God is not listening. God hates a prideful look. That's the very first thing it says he hates. I just want to warn you people, okay? Speakers were assembled by DOD Pride and featured a pile of three senior officials topped by Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Quite a pile of homos there, topped by Chuck Hagel. I know, you don't even want to have that picture in your head, for crying out loud. Chuck Hagel says, we're very proud of everything the gay and lesbian community has contributed and continue to contribute. With their service, we are moving closer to fulfilling the country's founding vision that all of us are on top of each other or on bottom of... Excuse me, that all of us are created equal. That's what I meant to say. I just got a little bit carried away. What's that? When did I start lisping? I didn't realize I was. Unquote, that's Chuck Hagel. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I told you, it's just sick. There's more here. The first openly homosexual general stood in an audience with her partner. And, of course, Valerie Jarrett was there. And like that. This is getting very difficult. And now, while all that is going on, the queering of our military continues unabated. In Nigeria, Putiskum, Nigeria, Islamic militants attacked a boarding school before dawn on Saturday, dousing a dormitory in gasoline and lighting it ablaze as students slept. At least 30 people were killed. They were burned alive. The Boko Haram Islamist group is to blame. And their name, by the way, means Western education is sacrilege. That's what Boko Haram means. Western education is sacrilege. And they attack particularly girls who go to school and anyone who's going to school. And, you know, me, I have my problems with Western education and government education. I have my problems with it. But this is the difference between Christianity and Islam. In Christianity, we disagree with Western education, and we find it sacrilegious. Yes, I do. I find it sacrilegious. But I don't burn the schools down and kill the children. I simply remove my children from that environment and educate them myself, and I hope to affect society for the better in the long run. And I hope to teach other people to love one another as Christ loved us. And the homosexualists and the leftists hate that idea more than Boko Haram, who burns schools down full of schoolgirls. They hate us more than them, if you can believe that. Boko Haram, the Islamist group in Nigeria, has killed more than 1,600 civilians since 2010. Christian homeschoolers, as far as we know, have killed no one. They haven't burned down a single school. So therein lies the difference. The New Yorker magazine came out and said that Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street are in fact homosexuals. And it was completely gratuitous because the people at Sesame Street, they say that Bert and Ernie are puppets and do not have sexual orientation, but the New Yorker wrote a whole story on how Bert and Ernie are a gay couple. And, you know, this, you got to wonder where the writers, these homo perverts at the New Yorker, where their minds are dwelling, you know? This is why I say homosexuality is criminal behavior. Because what they're doing, and it's a threat to children. Because as soon as the Supreme Court legalizes homosexual marriage, you have some queer at the New Yorker implying that a children's TV characters are homosexuals. Why is that? It's because these people are perverted, deviant, corrupt criminals. And they're thinking about kids, and they want our kids, and they're not going to get mine over my dead body. Folks, no society that has normalized heterosexuality has escaped a violent and destructive end. Bloodshed, violence, and death is in our future now that we have normalized homosexuality. All right, and as if we needed something to let us know that that's true, pro-abort protesters chanted "Hail Satan" at the Texas State Capitol to drown out pro-life advocates who were singing Amazing Grace. Well, they weren't really pro-life advocates. They were actually advocating abortion regulations. This is how sad it's become, ladies and gentlemen. The people who think they're on our side, they advocate killing 19-week-old babies, but not 21-week-old babies, so they think they're pro-life. Now, the other side is completely out of their minds, so they go crazy if they think even one abortion might stop. So these abortion regulators were surrounded by pro-aborts. So the abortion regulator started singing Amazing Grace, and the pro-aborts started chanting Hail Satan to try to drown them out. Yeah. Folks, these heathens don't need to hear Amazing Grace. What they need to hear about is the righteous judgment of an almighty God toward those who kill his children. Now, if they can be helped to understand that, the righteous judgment of an almighty God toward those who kill his children, if they can be helped to understand that, then we can tell them about grace. And let me ask you, who has the greater sin in this case, ladies and gentlemen? A group of godless heathens who advocate for abortion and chant Hail Satan? Or a group of people who say they're Christians advocating a law that says it would be legal to kill babies if they're 19 weeks or younger? Which group bears the greater sin? That's all I'm going to ask. I know, the whole Hail Satan thing looks terrible on television, don't get me wrong. And anyone who's part of the Hail Satan crowd, I mean, I know who they are. We all know who they are. I've been surrounded by them in my life. But who has the greater sin? The godless heathen who advocates killing, or the Christian who says you can kill children as long as they are under 20 weeks old? Anyway, that's it, folks. I have some more stuff. So what I'm going to do is I am going to do Bob Enyart's show this week, and I'll have a chance to visit with you all again very soon. I have a lot more material to cover, and I'll be doing that with Bob this week. Bob's going to have some great interviews this week, by the way. Scientific stuff, I love that stuff. So be sure to tune in over there at KGov. And speaking of that, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at Denver Bible Church, and at American Right to Life, the supporters of Personhood over at Personhood USA. And of course, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, not to mention my extremely attractive audio engineer, who did a fine job with the music today. And should the Lord tarry, I'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.